Voyager 2 is 48 years old, operating in interstellar space more than 12 billion miles from Earth, and NASA just figured out how to keep it running for another year. The engineering solution involved redirecting power from a voltage regulator safety mechanism to the science instruments, essentially accepting a small electrical risk in order to preserve the ability to collect data. The people making that decision are working with hardware designed in the 1970s, with a communication round-trip time of over 18 hours, based on telemetry they have to interpret, with incomplete documentation, because some of the original engineers have died.
There's something almost philosophical about that situation. The mission was designed for a 5-year primary mission. It is now in its 48th year. Every year of continued operation requires creative problem solving with diminishing resources, and the knowledge base for solving those problems is itself aging out of availability. It's a slow-motion race between the spacecraft's remaining power and NASA's remaining institutional knowledge of the systems.
The all-sky map of 500,000 supermassive black holes from the Sloan Digital Sky Survey is a different kind of scientific achievement, one that demonstrates what systematic data collection at scale produces. Individual black holes are famously difficult to observe directly. 500,000 of them, mapped across the sky using quasar signatures and spectroscopic redshifts, creates a three-dimensional structure of the universe at the largest scales we can currently probe. The distribution of black holes traces the underlying web of dark matter filaments that give the universe its large-scale structure.
Romania's sealed cave story is one of those discoveries that sounds like fiction. Workers drilling in Romania accidentally breached a cave system that had been completely sealed, no air exchange, no light, for 5.5 million years. Inside, they found a living ecosystem. Not fossils, living organisms, bacteria, invertebrates, creatures that had evolved in complete isolation from the surface biosphere for longer than the genus Homo has existed. The chemosynthetic ecosystem inside had been running entirely on chemical energy from hydrogen sulfide in the groundwater, with no connection whatsoever to photosynthesis.
The astrobiological implications are genuinely significant. One of the core assumptions in the search for life on other planets has been that photosynthesis is a near-universal prerequisite for complex ecosystems. Mouville Cave in Romania, which is the cave system in question, discovered initially in 1986, had already challenged that assumption. But every additional example of a self-sustaining chemosynthetic ecosystem in total darkness strengthens the case for life in subsurface oceans, on Europa, Enceladus, and similar bodies where sunlight never reaches.
The study suggesting life on Earth arose twice is in the same territory of radical rethinking. The research published in Science Alert's coverage proposes that molecular evidence suggests two separate abiogenesis events, two independent origins of life from non-living chemistry, with one lineage eventually outcompeting the other or merging with it. This is not consensus science. It's a hypothesis based on statistical anomalies in the genetic code. But the methodology is serious enough that it's generating real peer discussion.
Europe's Copernicus satellite service making wildfire tracking more accessible is worth flagging, especially with another severe fire season underway in the Mediterranean and the American West. Copernicus is the EU's Earth observation program, and the update makes near real-time thermal imaging of active fire fronts freely available through an improved API. Emergency services, media, and researchers can now get satellite fire data that previously required either purchasing commercial imagery or knowing the right people at ESA.
DeepMind's WeatherNext model, achieving breakthrough accuracy in cyclone track forecasting, connects directly. The combination of better satellite data access and better AI forecasting models represents a genuine capability improvement in climate emergency response. WeatherNext reportedly improved 72-hour cyclone track forecasts to a level of accuracy that previously required 120-hour lead time, meaning you effectively gain 2 days of warning before a storm makes landfall. At population scales, that's the difference between adequate evacuation and catastrophic casualties.
Now, here's where I want to invoke the spirit of genuine epistemic humility. The most confident claim in today's episode, and probably the one the HN community has the most consensus around, is that the 2027 HBM shortage is essentially locked in, and that AI infrastructure incumbents will maintain their structural advantages through at least 2028. That claim is load-bearing for a lot of consequential decisions. Investment theses, hiring plans, product roadmaps.
So let's pressure test it. What would have to be true for that consensus to be wrong?
Three scenarios. First, efficiency gains could outrun the shortage faster than projected. The DeepSeek V4 flash story we discussed earlier is relevant. If frontier quality results become achievable with smaller models that use less HBM per inference, total demand could flatten even as the number of AI applications grows. We've seen this pattern in semiconductor history. Demand projections for each generation of compute routinely overestimate how long the efficiency frontier stays static.
Second, the supply projection could be conservative. Memory manufacturers have strong incentives to signal scarcity because it justifies current pricing. If SK Hynix or Samsung announces a meaningful yield improvement or a new stacking architecture that increases effective HBM capacity without building new fabs, the supply curve shifts faster than the current contracts suggest. Memory capacity surprises on the upside have happened before. The 2019 DRAM glut was the opposite of what most analysts predicted in 2017.
Third, and this is the geopolitical wildcard, China could achieve HBM manufacturing capability that isn't currently in Western supply projections. CXMT, the Chinese memory manufacturer, has been publicly targeting HBM production for 2026. Western analysts generally put significant probability on that timeline slipping. But if it doesn't slip, a new supplier enters the market with government backing and potentially below-market pricing for Chinese AI companies specifically. That changes the competitive dynamics considerably, even if Western companies can't directly access that supply.
So what do we watch for? If we're wrong about the 2027 crunch being severe, the signal will be in Q4 2026 earnings calls from memory manufacturers, specifically any language about spot market availability or contract renegotiation. If hyperscalers start accepting spot buys rather than requiring long-term contracts, the scarcity signal weakens. And if any Chinese AI lab announces a major model training run on domestically sourced HBM, the supply-side surprise scenario becomes concrete.
The honest position is, the shortage is real, but the degree of severity and duration involves assumptions about technological stasis that are probably too pessimistic. The direction is correct. The magnitude is uncertain.